30-minute reviews, beware of spoilers, and exploring hyperspace lanes are all available ad-free. But if you want to support the show, you can go to bewareofspoilers.com and click the support button that's available on the Spotify website. Thank you. Good morning and welcome to Beware of Spoilers. I am Adam. Starting to warm up, which is nice. I feel like I always do a weather report at the start of these. I feel like fucking Mr. G, which is a local reference that most people won't get. But yeah, or, you know, El Roker. Here's what's going on in your neck of the woods. Anyway, we're here to talk about X-Men 97. And this episode feels like the most 90s TV show episode, I think, of all of them. The way Mojo is handled. And I love it. Like, I love everything about this episode. Because, like, number one, the visuals are astounding. And one of the things I really appreciated, too, is that we're getting a lot of this week between the Smiling Friends episode with Wimbley, really, you know, sticking true to that 64-bit, you know, polygonal, you know, art style that was popularized by the N64 and the, what's it called, and the PS1. And, you know, here we have a game that, like, anytime they show from the outside, the entire Cassidy episode is, Mojo has captured Jubilee and Sunspot. I think who the other guy is. He has captured the two of them in a, what's it called, in a video game. Because video games are the next big thing. And they do pixel art style. Which, okay, that's the easy go-to. But they don't do lazy pixel art style. This is intricately done, like, 16 to 32-bit animation. That's really well done. And it looks like a Sega Genesis or a SNES game. Which is good, because usually, and one of the things that always bugs me is, anytime we do this, we don't really get this in tributes like this. Ordinarily, if we're going to get something like this, it's going to be, the 64, it's going to be the, you know, we're going to get the 8-bit. Maybe you get a low fidelity version of 16-bit. But they committed and they did a great job with it here. And I commend them for that. I love the way Mojo is characterized. Him being the guy who is, like, you know, watching the, what's it called, him being the guy who's, you know, the super fan, who's like, you're gonna do what I want you to do, you're going to play in the world the way I want you to, we're gonna just do fun X-Men adventures. I feel this episode is a ruffle feathers. My one issue that I have with it is that this is part one of two, and it ends part one of two. And that's the big disappointment, I think. And I think had they not... It doesn't end in a way that would be like, oh, we're going to go back to this, and I think we're not even going back to it next week. If I remember the episode listing correctly, it's like we go back to it in 2 weeks. But to end it the way they do, and then, you know, go, okay, well, this is part one of two, we'll be back, you know, to have part one in the episode title, I think they would have been better served just doing this and then just naming the second part part two. Because it's like, oh, well, we have more coming now. And it's just, it's, visually the show continues to stun, like I've said, each week up until this point, it's the fidelity to that 90s cartoon style, while, you know, all those 90s Saturday morning cartoons all had that same kind of aesthetic, it commits to that aesthetic and does it very well, and then, and then on top of that, it kind of just moves on to, like, it just looks like an HD version of it in the best possible way. was definitely more I wanted to address with it. I mean, like, anytime we get a Jubilee episode, it's great. I like when they focus on Jubilee. She's fun. She gets to have her moment here, and then for her to team up with older Jubilee, who's been going through these trials over and over and over again, is a cool thing to have her do. Because it's about Jubilee's 18th birthday, but it's also about Jubilee growing up and not being a child anymore. And I think they handle that pretty well, by having this older Jubilee be like, look, we can't, like, as much as we would love to just stay here and play through these things over and over and over again, like, and just live in the past, we can't do that, we have to move forward, and I think that's a great way to handle that. Ironic, considering this is a continuation of a TV show that ended in 1996, but, you know, we can't, like, it's one of those things where, like, if you think about it too hard, you're like, but you're living in the past right now, and it's one of those things where, like, if you look at what the overarching, like, theme of Disney is in the next few years, it's very much, let's live in the past and just redo the same thing over and over again. It's like that line in, what was it, in The Last Jedi, let the past die, kill it if you have to, and then it's like, and now Palpatine is back again. Like, it's kind of that kind of thing, where it's like, commit to something, maybe. What else have we got? The subplot with Storm and Forge is interesting. I like the idea that Forge was behind behind the creation of the tech that can depower mutants. That's an interesting little ruffle in the way things work in this universe. I think it's an interesting way to add depth to the world. And that is kind of fun, in a morbid sense. I don't know how far this story can go, because, like, at a certain point, Storm's gotta either get her powers back, or she's gotta fuck off and leave Forge behind. Like, I don't know how long we can sit here and milk this, where it's like, is she going to get her powers back, or isn't she? Because at a certain point, again, you start wearing on my patience. And I don't know about me specifically, but you start wearing on the viewer's patience. Where it's like, why do I need to sit here for hours and hours and hours on end and just watch this will they, won't they of whether or not someone gets their powers back? And I feel like the answer is obviously yes. But, yeah. One of the other things I like is the Marvel Studios, the Marvel Animation logo has a modified version of the Avengers theme mixed with the X-Men original theme song, which is kind of cool. I can't wait until the X-Men movie comes out and it's an orchestral remix of that, like the orchestral remix of the Spider-Man theme from the 60s Spider-Man show for Homecoming. Hopefully I'm not alone in this. Hopefully when we get whatever the next Spider-Man movie is going to be, Spectacular Spider-Man or, you know, Spider-Man 4 with Tom Holland, which is allegedly going into production soon, and we'll talk about that on Sunday maybe, we might be doing 6 stories. You know what, no, we're not going to report on rumors. We'll talk about that when we get an announcement, but it's one of those things where, you know, we got that cool orchestral remix of the Spider-Man theme. It'd be cool to see if we get an orchestral mix of the X-Men 97 theme. I think we will. I think that's almost a guarantee, but it'll be cool to see it if it happens. And I think too, it's like one of the things I was thinking about on my way. On my way home from work yesterday, or on the way to the movie theater, I went to see with little letters, I think the reason they did X-Men 97 is X-Men 97 is going to be the Captain America Civil War for the X-Men. And what I mean by that is, Civil War came after Age of Ultron. And Age of Ultron was the second of the Joss Whedon Avengers movies. And the Russos were going to be directing Infinity War and Endgame at the time, Infinity War Part 1, Infinity War Part 2. So what it ends up being is kind of a zero issue, where when a new artist or a new writer takes up a run, the zero issue is designed to be like, this is the general framework I'm going to use to establish what these characters are, what the conflicts are, who everyone is, and how I'm going to handle these characters. That's the point of a zero issue. It's basically a marketing tool to point out this is how things are going to be going forward. So Civil War, as it goes to Marcus and McFeely writing The Avengers, and as it goes to, what's his name, as it goes to, you know, to Christopher and Joe Russo, it's like, okay, we're going to handle, you know, this is how we're going to handle The Avengers in Infinity War and Endgame. I think to an extent, this dynamic that we, this team specifically that we see here, is the team we're going to see in X-Men for the MCU. I think we're going to get, you know, I think we get, like, you know, Gambit is on the key team. I think Wolverine is a supporting member. I don't think he is the headliner. I think Cyclops is very much the team lead and is going to be in a role that's bigger and better than he was in the Singer movies or in, I mean, they're all Singer movies, in the original trilogy or the prequel trilogy. I think we're gonna, I think that this is a good indication of where we're going to go. And I think that's a, you know, that's kind of what it is. And the other thing is, too, it allows them to adjust. It's a low-stakes way to be like, okay, so what do people like? Who don't people like? What adjustments need to be made to the dynamics to get people to do it? And obviously, I don't think that whoever they cast as Gambit is going to have the thick accent, unless it's someone who actually has that accent. I don't think they're gonna put that on someone. And I don't think that whoever they cast as Rogue is going to go as hard with the Southern accent, where it's, like, cartoony here. But this is the team I think we're going to get, and the dynamic we're going to get. And I just love how unabashedly committed they are to all of the weird and deeper X-Men concepts that they were kind of afraid to touch on in the movies. So, my thing is, hopefully this is a lesson for other animation going forward. Hopefully this is a lesson for other animated shows that they do, where it's like, look, you don't have to strictly adhere to MCU standards, or MCU characters, or MCU, like, you know, canon. Like, you can go deeper. You can do more. And hopefully we get more of that in the future, because that's the best thing about this show, is that it's like, look, we're getting into shit that, like, I'm not the biggest X-Men fan on the planet, I'll admit it, like, but, like, I'm familiar enough with most of the characters, and familiar enough with most of the storylines, in approximate sense. Like, I would have never thought that I would have had Mojo, and again, I never watched the original show, maybe Mojo was in the original show. I get that sense from some of the dialogue in this episode, but I would not have thought they were going to use Mojo. It's a weird concept. Why would they use Mojo? And I think, too, that was the other thing. We talked about it last week when they did the episode about Mr. Sinister and the cloning. I'm like, this is going to be what this, you know, what they're doing here. They're going to do Mr. Sinister as the first really big bad MCU. And I think we're going to stick with that. But we'll wrap up there for today. Our next episode will be tonight. We will be doing, what's it called? Tonight we'll be doing Monkey Man. Tomorrow we'll be doing The Girls on the Bus in the Morning. And next week, I forgot what the movie is. But we will be back with that when it happens. Until our next episode, have a great rest of your week.